you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I am one of your hosts, Angel, with John Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
It is all good. We are back to old school format.
We were too ugly for YouTube. We were too ugly to be seen on YouTube.
Too ugly. You know what it is? Everybody just wants to pinch and dime you. It just got too expensive, and it was just crazy, but it's all good. I mean, one of the things that I like about doing what we did is that we actually went live, so we had people watching us as we or listening to us as we were doing it. But you know what? A podcast is a podcast, and we're still going to be doing our thing.
And we could still put this up on YouTube with just one static image, if you desire. You know, you can still be able to find this there eventually if we decide to do that, right?
Yes, it's just more motherfucking work for me, but I'm going to make it happen. It's going to be all good. So we are recording this as of what is today? Today is Friday the 13th.
Ooh.
Holy shit! So that's some good stuff. So welcome to another episode.
The only thing we're missing though is the theme song. Miss the theme song.
Oh yeah, but you know what? It's gonna come on later on.
Oh, okay. So I don't have to go like doom boo.
No.
Boo doom boo boo.
No, you just interrupted me for something stupid, douche. I'm gonna edit it back in. I know. I miss it too. All right, so this is another episode of the Indie Comic Review. Before we dive into the reviews, this is actually going to be for last week, which is the week of the 4th, and then this week, the week of the 11th as well. We have a couple of books, some really good stuff that we read. But it is Comic-Con week, and John did get a chance to go yesterday, right?
Yes, my first time as like an actual retailer, because I usually used to go and volunteer for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund table, but last year I did that, it was 2019. This year I got to go to represent the store since you could not make it this year.
Right.
And it was cool. I've never had to pay for a Comic-Con that I've ever gone to, which is awesome.
Jesus Christ, you cheap bastard. All right, so give us a little bit of rundown because you get to see it from a different perspective, especially as a retailer, because they do certain meetings or certain events for retailers, and then you got to actually walk the floor as well, right?
Yeah. So I really only got to I did the retailer breakfast that was sponsored by Lunar. Very wonderful bland continental breakfast there. Coffee was great, by the way. And there were some really good announcements from Lunar. Lunar, as you know, is like the big, the big up and coming distributor. They started by carrying DC, and now they've moved on to Image, as well as a few other companies like Oni and the new company Distillery. So they had some really good announcements that I'm just going to kind of run through really quick. I also went to the DC panel. That doesn't really apply to here.
Right.
And then just kind of had a chance to walk around the floor a little bit. But didn't really get a chance to see everybody. I do regret, J.D. Rosario, if you are listening, I did not get a chance to stop at your Unstoppable Comics booth. I know you were there. The booth looked great. I hope you're having a really great weekend. I know it's been a rough couple months for you personally. J.D. is a friend of the show and is always a really friendly guy, great to talk to. So unfortunately, he was one of the tables I did not get to go to. But I'm going to kind of run through a couple of the announcements from the Lunar Retailer Breakfast, because there's some really great things that I can tell you about. And awesome. One really cool thing that I can't tell you about because we are sworn to secrecy, because it's going to be revealed tomorrow.
But sure.
I'm very excited about this. So I want to talk about it next week. So I'm going to keep that on my sort of radar for next week when we talk about it. This is a really cool book that's going to be coming out with a pretty interesting creator. And it is very, 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 very tangentially related to Andy Kaufman. So I just checked that box off. Wait for that announcement on Saturday. If you're at Con on Saturday, it is an Image book, I believe. So if there's any Image announcements, go check this out. It's going to be really cool.
Cool.
But I'm not saying what it is. So we're moving on.
Move on.
So Distillery is a new company that just came out with a great one-shot tabloid size sort of preview book called Devil's Cut. And in Devil's Cut were 11 short stories, 8 of which are going to series over the next couple years. Mm-hmm. And some of the opening chapters will be in this Devil's Cut one shot. So they said they had a great number for that. 50K sold on that first that one shot that they put out to set up these. And so again, if you have not picked up that Devil's Cut and you're interested in these other upcoming series, definitely check that out because they are still available. But
so now Distillery is a bunch of creators that we know. Like I think Scott Snyder's under there, right?
Yeah, Eduardo Rizzo,
Tula LaToy,
Jacques, Mirka Andolfo, you know, I think Brian Azzarello. I mean, it's really good stuff. The first one out the gate is actually from Jacques. He has a great artist. And
created a Black Label book for DC, and this is his first time
creator on an independent level. The series is called Gone, and they had a good way. They said, look, for people who like Andor or Hunger Games, this is a really good series for you. Another one they pointed out, sort of like a horror theme book called Somnia, I think it is. I can't really read my handwriting, and I don't have the press material with me right now. And another one that looks really neat is Mirka Andolfo doing something called Blasphemous. It's Blasphemous, and it's for people who like they said the American God, if you like American Gods or The Good Place, this might be good for you.
That's a stretch.
It's a stretch, I know, but if you're a Mirka Andolfo fan, it definitely looks right up your alley, and that's going to be coming out in December. Cool. So that was really, really neat. Another great announcement from a cool publishing company that we have read a few of, Mad Cave Studios. Mm-hmm. Mad Cave Studios is getting into the licensing game, and we've talked about how important the licensing game is to independent creators. And they got three really cool ones that I'm kind of looking forward to. One is Dick Tracy. So they're bringing back Tracy. Yeah, looks a little very hard-boiled. So it's going to be, I think, the antithesis to the Warren Beatty movie that sort of killed any and all interest of Dick Tracy since 1990, except for Warren Beatty, because he will not let go of that. Another one is an old favorite. If you are of a certain age, you grew up watching a cartoon show called Battle of the Planets. Battle of the Planets was actually based on an old Japanese cartoon called Gatchaman, and it's got a huge following, and they're going to be launching that as a new series. I know that's been attempted before. I think Alex Ross did one a bunch of years ago. Right. This is written by Cullen Bunn, so we like Cullen. This is going to be a really good thing. His character work is great. And Gatchaman, you know, that kind of is very character based. So that's going to one to really look out for. That I'm really excited for. Also, they're going to be doing a Flash Gordon book, and it's kind of neat because the promo material kind of reflected the movie, but they said they're going to kind of take all the different versions of Flash Gordon and kind of merge them together. So I'm really kind of excited for that. That looks really neat. And then Oni was there really briefly. Oni currently came out with Dwellings, which is fantastic. But they're going to be writing this next year the Scott Pilgrim 20th anniversary coattails. So they got a lot of cool things set up for Scott Pilgrim versus the World 20th anniversary. One thing I thought of you when I saw this, Angel, was they have new box sets coming out for the Scott Pilgrim. Full hardcover collection. The boxes look like PlayStation boxes, which I thought
was cool.
And then there's a color version and a black and white version if you're a purist. So I thought that was really neat. I'm a packaging nerd, and I thought that was a really cool way to go. Nice. And then, of course, Image had a couple great announcements. One that I'm really, really excited about. Image had an imprint called Mad Ghost that Jeff Johns' imprint for his television stuff too, as well as his comic work. They have rebranded now as Ghost Machine. Mm-hmm. And the Ghost Machine logo is now eclipsing the Image logo on a lot of this stuff. So this is kind of neat what they're doing. They have this whole sort of world built that started with Geiger, continued with Junkyard Joe. They are going to redo, you know, kind of relaunch this whole imprint. There'll be a 64-page book next year that's going to kind of be like another entry point into this world because they're all connected. It's really cool. Great, great creators, Jeff Johns, Jason Faba, Gary Frank, Brian Hitch, Brett Anderson, and Francis Manipal. They're all kind of roped into this. So this world building is expanding. Mad Ghost, now Ghost Machine. They gave us a web address. So if you're interested in seeing what they have coming up, ghostmachinepro.com is the website. Really looking forward to that. And then something that's really cool that I think I can talk about this. Image is doing something that's going to be starting next year. It's a really cool initiative. It's called the Image Select Retailer Award. And it's going to be a bi-monthly honorific. And fans, customers will get to vote for their favorite store.
Oh, that's cool.
So Alex Cox, who we've talked about, he's writing that Kong, the Great War series for He is also the director of direct market sales for Image. And one of the great things that Alex said in his presentation yesterday, he goes, he looked at all the retailers. He goes, I've been there. I know what it's like. You're bagging and boarding for your pulls every week. You're lifting 400 pound boxes combined over the course of the day, filing, pulling, boom, boom. Because Alex has been in the trenches. He's done that. And so Alex really recognizes the hard work that retailers do, even the grunts, right? That are you know, the staff of a shop as well. So this is sort of Alex's way of kind of getting recognition for those people that he feels deserves it, because he was one of us at one point, and it's still in him. So I thought that was really great. I love what Alex is doing. He's a great guy. And I was really happy to hear that announcement from him. So I'm really looking forward to that. So folks, if you have a favorite store that you go to, man, keep an eye out for this this Image Award.
That's pretty awesome.
Favorite store. It's going to be every 2 months there will be a winner. So it's not a one-time only thing. Which is great.
Cool.
All right, that's it for that I have for yesterday from Comic-Con. Of course, that's going on today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Right. So if you get a chance to get out there, you know, have fun, folks.
Now, hold on. So did you? Because I came across something, and I don't know if it's true, because I was in disbelief of it.
Okay.
So because I've been watching Thundercats, not the original. I didn't know that they re-released something in 2011.
Yeah.
It only was one season, but I'm like going through it. But then I'm flipping through. I have no idea where I saw this. But Dynamite, who licenses all these different properties now, I believe is licensing Thundercats.
Ooh, yeah, that's not an announcement that I saw. And I didn't really see anything about that.
I hope it's true. I gotta find out if it is true, because we're in dire need of a new Thundercats comic, and hopefully it'll be good.
Yeah, last few comic attempts in the last 20 years were not as good. Not really what people wanted from the Thundercats property. So that they can get that. Yeah, again, I mean, that was just day one. So there's going to be lots of announcements throughout the weekend. Like I said, including one that we were told about as retailers that I cannot tell you yet. So.
Which is fine, because you keep teasing it and you're making it worse.
next week you're going to be like, eh.
Yeah, whatever. And it's going on the weekend, guys. So if you guys are out there, cool. Just have fun and be safe. And I guess we'll wait for John's announcement next week on what he can't tell us.
I will. I will say one of the things, you know, talking to other retailers and other people who do the con, and what I noticed was everyone was looking around at Thursday, and they were like, "Is this Saturday?" Because it was packed yesterday. Packed. It was a really good showing for Thursday. Like,
I mean, I think this is probably the, I would say, first official show after the pandemic, even though we already had one.
Yeah.
But because everything seems almost normalized right now, it felt like it. I mean, I was getting messages that tickets were sold out, you know, like maybe 3 weeks prior, 4 weeks prior to the show. So, you know, it was going to be huge. But I mean, it's cool. It's always good to see, like, you know, it's one thing to be a fan, but, you know, to be in the trenches like we are as retailers and working on that back end, and having some exciting news coming down the line and down the pipe just means that there's going to be some really great content for the customers and the fans, which is awesome. So, yeah. All right. Well, all right. Comic-Con. Yeah. It happens every year. I guess we'll see what happens next year. All right, so moving on really quickly. So we got one more bit of news. It's not great news. It's actually really sad news.
Yeah.
John, I'll let you handle it, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, man, we lost another great one. You know, and this guy, Keith Giffen. Yeah, the main man. Keith Gibbon is responsible for so much joy in comics over the years. Co-creator of Ambush Bug, creator of Lobo, creator of Rocket Raccoon, the man who introduced the terms, you know, One Punch and Fraggin' Bastich and Bwahaha into our lexicon. I mean, this guy was such an amazing artist, such a unique style, and such a great sensibility as far as his humor, and could really do serious and then turn on a dime and make you laugh. There's really no one like Keith Giffen. He, and by all accounts, really nice guy to fans and to retailers. I know he did a signing at Joker's Child early in the early days, and just was such a delight, according to Len and Karen. So yeah, real tough loss, 70 years old. In classic true Keith Giffen style, his last wish was his announcement of his passing was to be a tweet that says that literally it was as if it came from him. It says, it said, I told Comic-Con I was sick, or I told them I was sick. Anything to get out of going to New York Comic-Con. Keith Giffen, RIP, and like the years, and then he ended it with Bwahaha. And so, I mean,
classic,
you know, and good on his kids for seeing that through. But what a great way to go out, and just to sort of raise that middle finger one last time at, you know, certain things, that certain conventions of conventions, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah,
it's just, you know, and it's just another reminder that just we keep losing these really great people, because, you know, I mean, it's one thing to have like the current creators, but people that, you know, kind of like change the market with certain characters and stuff like that, that are going to be around for a long time, that, you know, I mean, Lobo's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, not everybody can write him in that sense, or write him like he was written, and drawn and stuff like that too. So that old school Lobo stuff was just fantastic. You know, I'm going to miss that.
Yeah, and I don't know if Keith, you know, was able to see the Blue Beetle movie that came out a month or two ago, but he also, you know, co-created Jaime Reyes as a character, and a lot of the mythology that he built into that book from 2006 made it into the movie. So I hope he did get to at least see that and was well compensated for that, and at least that was something that he got to see realized fully on the big screen, you know?
Yeah, which sucks. I think the check came the day after.
Right, exactly.
A little too late. But hopefully his kids get to enjoy the stuff like that as well. So yeah, another loss for our community and stuff like that, but I'm pretty sure he's giving them hell up in heaven.
exactly. And we have all this great work that he left behind that we will always be able to have access to. So
damn, and I was gonna go to freaking Comic-Con to have my book signed.
No, geez.
Son of a bitch. All right, again,
anything to get out of Comic-Con.
All right, cool. So that's all that we have for you when it comes to the news. We're gonna run through these books that we had for last week, which was the week of October 4th. So let's start with those. So yeah. let me start.
Yes.
Since you've been talking a lot.
The big metal elephant in the room.
Big metal elephant. All right. So we're going with DWJ. If you don't know what that stands for, then you suck. This is Daniel Warren Johnson and Mike Spicer. This is Transformers. This is on the Skybound imprint under Image. This is Robert Kirkman's imprint. So we all know that Robert Kirkman's, you know, got the license rights to, I think it's G.I. Joe and Transformers, and is creating this world. Everything's about universe building and world building now. So we're going to have all that stuff coming out. We'll see who does it really well, and we'll see if, you know, any of this stuff actually sticks. But the first book that came out in this whole series of, you know, world building, or the Energon verse, was Void Rivals. And I've been reading it, and it's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first Transformer that we got out of this particular book was Jetfire. Who was found on an asteroid by these two rival factions of a male and female, looking for resources for, you know, back home. And, you know, for some reason they awaken him and he just takes off and leaves him there, which is hilarious. they stranded on the asteroid. So here we got Transformers issue number one, written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson, colors by Mike Spicer, and then letters by Russ Wooten. Listen, we just raved about Daniel Warren Johnson last year in regards to, you know, the book that he gave us, Do a Powerbomb. He just has a really good sensibility, I think, of understanding his material, mm-hmm. which is great. And he writes to that. There's a really good, you know, editorial in the back that he gives in regards to his experience and influence of what Transformers did for him as a child. And sort of like, and I know we've said this in the past where, you know, artists or creators, you know, do a book and it's a love letter to their childhood. But this is really, truly a love letter to his childhood in regards to the influence that Transformers, the actual comic, had on him. And you can see it. And I think what he does really great is that he has a really great way of having these mini stories within the overall arc of the story that he wants to tell. So it grounds it. And so what I mean is, all right, so we know that we're going to get the Autobots and the Decepticons sometime. And they're going to be two rival factions that are going to be going at each other because we've seen the cartoons, we read the comics in the past. But there's this relationships that are happening outside of everything that's going on. So we know Spike and Sparky, father and son. We've seen them in the show. We've seen them in the comics before. But he's writing them as sort of like they have this relationship that's strained and something's happened. And we don't know. We kind of assume that we know, but we really don't know what's happened. And his father's like, you know, drinking a lot at the bar. And, you know, they have this really like strained relationship. And we can see that from the very beginning. So we know something's happening there. And then he has his best friend, Carly, this female. They're getting ready to, you know, go to some peak where they're going to take a telescope and look at stars and stuff like that. And they happen to fall into a crack that happens to be the freaking Autobot ship that crash landed who knows how long ago. Now, all of this is happening simultaneously as Jetfire is landing on that plane. So from whenever he took off in Void Rivals to now, he's landing on that plane and basically he's activating the ship's computer to be able to regenerate all these Autobots and Decepticons that are on the ship. So they were having some kind of like all-out war on the ship. Something happened and they all got knocked out. So they're just all down. So what's funny about what happens there is that the ship is randomly rejuvenating or you know, waking up Autobots and Decepticons just randomly. So it's not saying, okay, these are the Autobots, let's wake them up first, and then this is the Decepticons, let's wake them up second kind of thing or whatever, or not wake them up at all. It's just waking up random robots as it goes on. And so as it's waking them up, you got Starscream wakes up, you got Optimus wakes up, and you got when Starscream wakes up, because I think he wakes up first, he's just blasting Autobots that are just down and out, like killing them outright. So we're seeing Autobots that we've known in the cartoons and in the comics previously just dying straight off the bat, which was insane. So, you know, Darren Warren Johnson just took a step there and just said, you know what, fuck it. Let's just start killing everybody. And then so this whole battle ensues on there while, you know, Spike and Carly are freaking in the middle of all this. And they get picked up by Optimus Prime and he's going to, you know, protect them as Starscream is losing his shit all the way through. And then we have Shockwave waking up, setting out his Jaguar and stuff like that, which is fantastic. Optimus Prime blows him to pieces, which is even more fantastic. So we're just losing Decepticons and Autobots left and right in this book, which is, I just love it. And so you have sort of like this mini battle that ensues, and I think Optimus Prime at the very end runs Starscream off. And then we just leave it as Starscream finding a friend of Sparky's dad at the very end. And what's crazy is that this is the first human that he runs into, but he picks him up and he's like, these are the creatures of this planet or whatever. They're squishy. And the last panel is just squish and a blood splat. Yeah. So he literally just squished him in his arm. So we have sort of like this sort of like this chaos because, you know, Optimus and the other Autobots are just being woken up, but they've destroyed the computer that rejuvenates the robots. So they can't bring anybody else back up. So they're stuck in this, you know, they got Spike they're being introduced to. We're being introduced to. We got Starscream, the bad guys. We don't know what happened that led to the ship crashing or them being all together in that. But we know that Jetfire was responsible for getting them up. And we know that Jetfire, I believe, was a Decepticon and saw what was happening on the ship and kind of just is like, I'm not down for that. So you got all these like mini stories on this arc that's going to be happening within this universe that Robert Kirkman is creating. I loved it. I mean, it was great. Like I said, he's just, his art style is fantastic. He has just a really great way. If you're going to humanize these, you know, 20-foot, 30-foot robots, and you want somebody who's going to make it seem real and not hokey, it's going to be DWJ all the way. So even if you're not a Transformers fan, I would pick it up because it's not going to be your normal Transformers book. Yeah, it's just really sharp. I love it. Yeah. I mean, the colors on it, I mean, he did it, and Mike Spicer just took his work and just kind of like just brought it to life with the colors. So definitely check it out. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about Daniel Warren Johnson is his enthusiasm for the things that he's working on. You know, do a power bomb. He had that write up where he basically said he never really had an interest or love for wrestling, discovered New Japan Pro Wrestling when he was taking care of his newborn child and just loved it. And you could feel that love on that for that thing on the page in the book. And then this was the flip side. He has loved Transformers, you know, ever since he was a kid. And that apparently the love for that, it just pours through this book as well. I didn't get a chance to read this yet, but I am really looking forward to it. I've heard such great things about it. Robert Kirkman was actually at the retailer breakfast yesterday. Thanked retailers for the support. First of all, for keeping the secret of Void Rivals. And then for the support of Transformers number one, sold about 180,000 copies of that first issue.
Wow.
And he also showed some preview pages of Duke, as well as Cobra Commander, the two G.I. Joe legs of the Energon universe. So those look really good. Really, really excited about the Cobra Commander book. I think that's going to be a really fun one. He was always one of my favorite characters from the old comics that Marvel used to do. So I think it's... Yeah, again, I think it's a great combination of creators who love this and a fresh start for these properties that I think people are really going to grab onto. And so far, it seems to be working. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Nice.
All right, what's your book from last week?
Last week, because, you know, I love Halloween month, because you usually seem to get a good sort of horror-type book every week. Last week, we got from Dark Horse Comics, The Midnight Show. And I do want to stress that they did spell midnight the proper way, N-I-T-E. This is written by Cullen Bunn, illustrated by Brian Hurt, colored by Bill Crabtree, lettered by Jim Campbell, and edited by Daniel Chabon, associate editor Chuck Howitt-Lees, assistant editor Misha Gare. So this is a really cool book. Really, the setup is there's a showing of one of these lost, cursed, unfinished films that was sort of the last work of a very famous fictional movie actor named Basil Saxon. And Basil Saxon is very much like a Lon Chaney, Man of a Thousand Faces type guy. So essentially, Basil Saxon in his career played all the monsters, every type of monster you can imagine, from a Dracula to a Frankenstein to a werewolf to a creature from the Black Lagoon and so forth. And he was really good at, you know, immersing himself physically and I guess mentally into these roles. And so one of the things that Cullen Bunn does really well, like I said, is character development. He introduces characters that seem fully realized. They have emotions. No one is really just of a stock or a type. And so you kind of have that in here because throughout the course of them sort of showing this movie, you sort of meet the people that live in this town. You're going to kind of focus on this one guy who's really amped and excited for this. And then his girlfriend that he brought, who's less excited. So she's sort of your dissenting voice as far as the excitement. She's sort of like, you know. And as the movie is being shown, scenes from the movie bleed into the real world. And so you have a scene in the movie where they're looking for the werewolf. And then in the real world, the werewolf shows up and starts, you know, decimating people that are around him in this town. And so it does a really good job in the panel work of showing, like, here's the movie and now here's what's happening in real life at the same time sequentially, and then how the sort of the world sort of cross over. So that was really cool. I really like Brian Hertz's art. It is very comic booky, but it also very moody as well. So it really falls right in line with what this story is telling. It's a really great setup and a really fun read. And I really look forward to seeing where this goes. I'm also curious about what this movie was going to be, because if you have this one guy playing all these different characters in this movie must have been insane narratively. So I kind of want to see a little bit more of what this movie was supposed to be about. But yeah, I really dug this. It was just like a sort of a fun horror romp in a small town centralized in this movie theater, showing a cursed film from a, you know, from this man of a thousand faces type actor. And it was a great setup with a really cool cliffhanger ending. So I'm really looking forward to where this goes, to see these monsters come to life, as well as the apathy and ignorance of some of the people in the town as they're confronted with this, how this main guy is going to come into play, and exactly how all of this is happening, you know. So yeah, Midnight Show by Dark Horse. Definitely check it out for some good Halloween spooks.
Nice. All right, so on to this week's books, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'm up. So here, what do we have? Operation Sunshine. This is from Dark Horse Comics. The script is by Henry Zabrowski and Marcus Parks. Art by David Rubin. Colors by KJ Diaz. And letters by Fernan Delgado. All right, cool. So I picked this book up for two reasons. One, I don't know, I've been getting into the supernatural, I think, a little bit more. I think since the Colin Bunn stuff, we had so much of it. And then I looked inside, and the art style just reminded me of what's his name, Steve Scrooge, that did a Post Americana.
Yep.
And like a cross between him and Ed Piskor.
Oh, okay.
Like, and I don't really read any of his stuff because his stuff is like really extreme. Ed Piskor stuff, like that Red Room stuff. Oh my god, like, just the art, and it's crazy. Like, it'll give me nightmares. But it just reminded me of a combination of the two, and I like that. And there was one other artist. Trying to remember the name of the book about the five demons that didn't finish.
Oh, the James Stokoe.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So a cross between those three. And I don't know, for some reason I like that art style because it's just so funky and out there. So that I gravitated towards that in this particular book. And I liked it. So art-wise, I really enjoyed it. It's sort of like that cartoony style like that they have. And I really like that. I think I've been gravitating more towards that cartoony style. Like, I want my comics to be comics. I don't want them to be photorealistic. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to be, you know, too pretty. I want them to be like they're hand drawn, just beautiful books. And this is that. And we're in the world of vampires. So basically, you have two characters that you're going to be following. The main lead is a female vampire named Hex. And then later on, we're introduced to another vampire named Steve. And Steve is really funny because not only is he just like a regular name, but he has like a regular job. So he goes out in the daytime all geared up, like goggles and everything, so the sun doesn't hit him. And then when he's at work, he sort of has like this tarp over his cubicle that makes it seem like it's like a fortress within his office, within the office that he set up with all these cubicles around. And nobody says anything. It's just so weird for that, so that he can keep the sun out from his cubicle, which is hilarious. So basically, you have these underling vampires, or like ones that aren't born vampires, pure vampires. They're called bugs. And then you have the OVs, that she calls them OVs, original vampires. And there's sort of like this back and forth between the two, where some OVs are hunting out some of these bugs. They definitely don't respect them. They look down to them because they're not pure. And then you have some of these bugs that will hunt the OVs as well. So basically, you have sort of like an introduction to these two characters. And then they get introduced to an OV later on that is going to give them an offer to become human again. They just have to find this relic, help him find this relic that will allow them to become human again. And the idea of becoming human for the both of them, she's been around for over 300 years. I don't think he's been around as long, but the, you know, the prospect of becoming human again is really enticing to them. So through the entire story that you get to know who she is, she's, you know, 365 years old, but she looks like a teenager. And then he's much older looking, but I think he's younger than her. This contrast between their personality comes across really well in the dialogue. And the way that they kind of get introduced and how she throws herself into his world, because he's alone. And now all of a sudden, now he has this person in his life. It's almost like the 40-year-old virgin when the female comes along into the relationship, throws all his his life into array. You get that sense here. And then when you throw in sort of like the Dracula at the very end that introduces himself, it's just funny because it's like a, you know, all these different myths that we have of like vampires. One of them being that they can't enter a domicile unless they're invited. The door opens when they knock. He opens up the door and she screams right away, "You're not invited. You're not invited." And he just walks in and he says, "Oh, it was one of those silly superstitions." And just laughs it off and stuff like that. It was good. I liked it. It's different from when I used to, because it's not like a superhero kind of thing. You know, like it's not Blade against, you know, vampires and stuff like that. But there's real consequences in regards to, you know, she had killed one of these OVs and literally threw him out the window in the sun. And he's just like all burnt up, but he's still like Steve runs across him. So as he's being thrown out of, I think Steve's apartment is where she was at. And he's coming through, you can see the mouth still moving on the floor, like trying to say something, which is really cool. Cause it just looked like a slob of just vomit. And then this, you know, this Dracula finding them to give them this offer was really interesting because he just came out of nowhere, which is really weird. So, yeah, hopefully I'm going to continue with it because, like I said, I like the art and I was intrigued with, you know, the story itself. So I want to see where it goes. So, yeah, Operation Sunshine. If you like sort of like that vampire genre kind of stuff, check it out. Dark Horse.
Cool.
I liked it.
Nice. So this week, the book I was able to read this week is not a horror Halloween type theme book, but this resonated in a lot of ways right from the title. So this is also from Image Comics. This is Midlife or How to Hero at 50. It is written by, and I got the correct pronunciation of this because he was there yesterday too, Brian Buccietto.
Not
Buccioletto. Okay. Buccietto. And I think I still butchered it. But anyway, illustrated by Stefano Simeone and lettered by the prolific lettering master of Hassan Atsmani Alahu. And this, Image with the editor. I don't know. There's an editor.
Okay.
So this book resonates in a few ways. Not necessarily. Definitely from the opening page, because the opening page is 1997. You have these three friends coming out of a movie and they are complaining about how this movie, one friend specifically, is just so worked up and really upset about it that this movie single-handedly will kill comic book movies for all time going forward. So yes, they're talking about Batman and Robin. They make no bones about it. The one thing that I did kind of have an issue with is they always hang the nipples on the bat suit on this movie, but it didn't start with this movie. It actually started with Batman Forever, but
they were more prominent in this movie. They were like hard all the time.
They were way more prominent, and there were more butt shots in this movie too.
Yes.
So, but they do. They talk about the credit card. Like it was a great opening scene. And you really get to know these three guys. One is going to enter the police academy, which is great because he basically says he's only doing it for the benefits of the gun. The one who's complaining the most about the he's the one who complains the most about Batman and Robin. There's another friend who you don't have any indication of what his goals are in the future, and it turns out when you get to the present day, he's pretty much homeless. And then your main character whose father was a fireman and was killed in duty, he is going to, his plan is to step up and continue the legacy and be a fireman as well. And it turns out his job, when you flash forward to the present day, on his 50th birthday, his job with the fire department is to, he's basically internal affairs, right? He's HR. And so he kind of gets rided on by his other coworkers that he's not a real fireman. But because of what happened to his father, he does have this sort of phobia, this fear, this hang up about jumping into fire. So he doesn't even consider himself a fireman, right? He is on a second or third marriage. He has an adult son, and then there's a younger daughter, and his new wife tells him on his birthday that she is pregnant now. So he's now going to be a dad at 50. Basically, you get a real good sense of this guy's. So the first book, this first issue really reads like a slice of life. You just get a real sense of what this guy's situation is, you know, his job, his family life, what he has to deal with. Turning 50, and he doesn't want to party. He just doesn't care, right? And then something happens at the end that forces him to run into a burning fire to save something. It's not a person, but it's an animal that you meet. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he comes out of this. Something explodes, and he's unscathed. And that is basically the end of the first issue, but it's a great way to go out because up to this point, everything was so normal. And now this guy has apparently some indestructibility component in his genetic makeup that we will hopefully find out as this story goes.
So he doesn't know how he's.
He has no idea. He has no idea. And I think that's really cool. Great way to end the first issue because now you have this sort of discovery. I kind of look at this as a fun Unbreakable because Unbreakable was a really good movie, but boy, was it like, right? So it's just down and blah, blah, blah. And this has a little bit of that midlife beat down by life aspect of it, but it also has a, like I said, a lightness to it. And some of that has to do, I think, with the art by Simeon. Which is really nice. It's like realistic but cartoony. The color palette works really well for the scene transitions. Some of the line work is a little too thin for my eye, but as I was reading it, I was really getting into it. I was really pulled in, and I found everything easy to interpret and to digest and to read. So I thought the dynamics of the characters in this were great. I thought the setup is really cool, really good hook. I really want to see where this is going. Midlife or How to Hero at 50. I think a lot of us middle agers, I know you're not yet because you just turned 38. We're really kind of, this will resonate with us in a lot of ways, especially those of us who, you know, at sometimes have that, you know, well, what if I was indestructible? What would I do? And I like to see where this is going to go. So, I really like that. It's good effort.
Which is weird because I wonder if they're going to introduce an antagonist at all.
Right. That's the thing. What is, you know, because again, that was the, you know, and you don't want to mimic the Unbreakable movie too much.
Right.
But that was the whole thing was like, if there's one side of this, then there's going to be the other. There's going to be the opposite of that. So is this a situation, where this guy is granted powers and somewhere else there's someone who's less altruistic or less human in their thought and living and understanding that also has something. So there's a great setup, a great first issue because it's not light. It is just all set up for this guy's situation, but you really get a sense to know this guy. And now you have this big question mark at the end that, again, I'm really eagerly awaiting the second issue to see where this goes. So.
Oh, man, this sucks. This is why I hate reviews because now I have to pick up the book. I saw it and I was like on the edge and I was like, this one, but then Operation Sunshine got me, and I was like, I didn't want to read too much, but now I'm gonna have to pick it up. Right. You suck. It sounds good, actually. All right, well, there you have it. You got four books to choose from over the last couple of weeks. Yeah. We definitely will be here next week because John has an announcement that he's gonna be making because he can't share this week. He said that explicitly over and over and over.
I also had a book this week that I really wanted to review, I didn't have a chance to read. It's from Image, when their Zizigi imprint, A Haunted Girl. by Ethan and Naomi Sachs and Marco Lorenzana. It looks really interesting, and it also seems very important, which I'll get into next week as to really why I would like to talk about this.
Two other books. He wrote it with his daughter.
It's interesting, and it's
we can talk about it next week, because I read the insert on it, and it's definitely worth talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one I picked up, Destiny Gate from Top Cow and Image, based on a video game. So I want to kind of read that just to see if I can, without having knowing any of the game, to see if that is a good cold entry. I might talk about that next week. And I just want to honorable mention Tony Fleeks, co-writer of Local Man with Tim Seeley and writer of Stray Dogs, one of our favorite books from a couple years ago. He's doing this new Army of Darkness Forever book. If you are an Army of Darkness fan, we are at the 30th anniversary of that movie.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
This is a direct continuation from the director's cut version of that movie. And it kind of tries to reconcile both endings. So if you're an Army of Darkness fan, you're going to want to pick that up. It is very much a retread of the movie at the beginning, just to set you up for what's going on. So even if you haven't seen the movie, you get a good sense of what that movie was about. But yeah, nice. Army of Darkness Forever, that is from Dynamite. So that's another one that I picked up this week that I just wanted to mention really quick.
Cool. All right. Awesome. Yeah, plenty of content out there, guys, to pick up. So make sure you definitely visit your local comic shop, support, and pick up some books. All right, cool. That is the end of our Indie Comic Review. You got some news there as well. We'll have some more for you next week. Same bat time, same bat place. Oh, we're an indie comic. So what's the opposite of a bat? It's not mainstream. Same mouse time, no mouse time.
The Flighter Mouse. The Flighter Mouse from the original Tick comic. There you go.
Ooh, there you go. All right. If you like what you're hearing, just make sure you click subscribe to the podcast, because we'll be here every week, hopefully, or if not every other week or sometime, to bring you some news and some much needed reviews. If you want to be on a podcast, if you're a creator, want to promote yourself and or something that you have got going on, go to amazingactioncomics.com/podcast, fill out the form. We'd love to have you on to discuss you and or your project. Visit amazingactioncomics.com to stay up to date on everything that we've got going on over there, because we still got stuff going on over there. As always, make sure you support your local comic book shop, because without them, we wouldn't have this opportunity to talk to you every week to discuss all the things that we love. John Phil, where do you get your comics from?
Well, John buys his comics at the Joker's Child, where Phil works at the Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And folks, you know, we have all these great books that we talk about. We do have Transformers. We got some in. We're going to get some more back in. We'll get those second prints. Come on down to the Joker's Child if you're ever in Fairlawn, New Jersey, especially if you happen to be at Comic-Con and you kind of want to Jerseyify your experience. Come on down across the bridge and come and see us. But like Angel said, always patronize your local comic shop, because honestly, without local comic shops, we would all just be stuck reading digital comics, and then we would all be blind.
That's correct. That's the good patronize, not the bad.
The good, yes. Oh, you run a comic shop.
All right, kiddos. Until next time, please be amazing. Stay amazing and read something amazing.